From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180. Queued up by Edley's Barbecue with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Glad you're with us out of the gates, ready to go. Friday edition, it's here. We're going to get you to the weekend. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Looking at Paul Kuharski in Brentwood, I'm Jonathan Hutton. In Murfreesboro, David Reed is the chairman of the board, making the show happen for us today, right there in downtown Nashville. Chad Withrow returns next week. Paul Reed, good morning.
Good day, gentlemen, and I mean good day. Weekend ahead, week off ahead. Can't lie and say I'm not excited. A lot of packing up to do and shipping out of town for the one vacation of the year. On a year where we had actually planned to do a lot of traveling. So hope it's safe. We'll do our best and take it from there. But
when do you head out?
Tomorrow morning. And, you know, I'm not much of a driver. It's not much I'm going to be in the car for. But the beach is something I'm willing to do that for. Also, I'm not much of a flyer. At this in this stage, I wouldn't be much of a flyer. So,
is the anticipation of a beach trip the greatest vacation anticipation? Other than, like, Europe or something?
World travel, I think, would outrank it. But yeah, beach trip with the kid, excited. And I haven't looked at the weather forecast at all. I have to say that the Weather Channel app absolutely sucks, because Simon really wanted to go to the pool yesterday and I wanted to accommodate. None of his friends could make it. And I look at the radar on the Weather Channel app and it shows like one cell that's passing as we're getting ready to go over there, and we go over there and it pours the whole time. He runs into some other friends and they're in there because there's no sign of lightning or anything. I was in for a little while, but I downloaded Weather Underground and I'm changing apps for weather related information. I'm done with rain showing up when my phone tells me there will be none.
Done. You know, I'm trying to figure out which one I go to, and it's just Google for me. I just Google, you know, Nashville weather, and whatever pops up is what I'm going with, instead of looking at the app. I don't even know if I have one downloaded.
I've relied on, I'm comfortable with the Weather Channel app, like, telling me the temperature and the, you know, likelihood of rain, 20%, 30%, all of that. But if I'm looking at what's here right now or what's coming, it's been a great disservice to me and my family in recent months.
So Reed, Go ahead, Reed. Sorry.
I use the Channel 5's Storm Shield app, but this was almost my primary complaint yesterday. So there's been two occasions in the past couple of weeks where I'm scrolling through Twitter and I see, oh my gosh, there's a hurricane hitting South Carolina. Oh no, this is just an advertisement for the National Weather Service's app. I thought it was I thought it was someone that popped up in my feed, like a weather thing. I thought it was Nash severe weather, and I looked down and I was like, there's a hurricane? I don't know anything about a hurricane. No, it's just an advertisement.
Yeah. Well, there is a tropical storm that's hitting the East Coast this weekend.
What you stirring up there, Reed? You coffee guy now?
No, we're about to toast him. I salute you, David Reed, today, the final day of double duty. Back to normal as it should be, starting on Monday for Mr. Reed.
No more two-a-days.
Yeah. Wait, I think let's not be rash. Things can change.
Paul, that was a statement. That was not. that was a statement.
Well, mine was a statement, too. Let's not be rash. Unpredictability ahead, I fear. I hope not, but I fear.
Well, Reed has certainly pulled his weight here with the double duty over the last 3 months. So if no one else will tell you, Reed, we will tell you. Phenomenal job. But yes, you will stick around for 6 p.m. each night.
Yes, FYI. Okay. Of course. Yes. Just a nap in between now, which I'm good with.
Coming up, Clay Travis will join us today. That will be at 11:15 this morning. Austin Price with the VolQuest report at 12:20. And John McClain, he's on the show today at 1 o'clock with the latest NFL headlines. We'll go through the game day protocols, for instance, that the NFL put out to teams yesterday. There's a lot to read through on all of that. And we knew there's a lot of planning behind the scenes that's been going on. It's going to take an army, Paul, to pull off everything on game day that they need to do in order to keep both teams socially distanced, both from, you know, the locker room and also just everyone else that it takes to make a game day work within a facility.
A lot of player backlash to the no swapping jerseys and no handshakes, including Kenny Vaccaro, who I think said, but we can tackle each other. So you tackle each other on the last play, and then as the clock winds down, everybody will find their 6 feet of distance. I think a lot of it's very unrealistic that kickoff and you're allowed, and then boom, as the clock is counting down that final play, when people are usually mingling at the end of the game, everyone will put their arms to their side and find their bubble as they walk off of the field. Some of it's just not particularly realistic in the context of habits that have been formed over years and years of play. And it also seems like kind of ridiculous to declare at that moment, okay, we're back into safe right. mode after 3.5 hours of very unsafe mode. It's going to be really hard, I think, to execute some of those things and to flip the switch on and off on a Sunday afternoon.
They're required to stay at a hotel. The teams are required, both teams, home teams as well, required to stay at the hotel, bus to the stadium. Part of these requirements on game day will include the path from the bus to the locker room to not have anyone around. You know, you're supposed to separate it so that the team can get in, the tier one group can get in to the tier one area. Media is allowed to film that entrance, but from 12 feet, wearing the proper mask and everything else that is involved with that. That's just the very surface level description of what goes on prior to kickoff and prior to warmups.
Say anything about less crowded buses? Like, are there more buses? Did it say anything about that? I didn't see that.
Oh, I think they're going to have to. I mean, the Titans normally have 6 buses on the road. I'd be surprised if it's anything less than 10. Thinking about how you space through some of these buses and separate people.
Still curious to see if there's game day travel. I think there'll definitely be game day travel in some of the northeastern, you know, a Washington, Philadelphia, or New York, Philadelphia yep. game. There's no reason really to go a day early and do a hotel except
could
out of habit.
Titans do that? Could the Titans do that with Indianapolis?
Conceivably.
Cincy too far?
I don't know. You have to weigh the risks. You know, would you rather do the whole operations thing and get on a plane, which presents tight quarters, be on a bus? You're doing a bus either way. You're weighing how much time in tight quarters, whether it's worth getting in and out of a hotel, all of that stuff. And you know, I guess they've got an equation that they're going to put up on a board and decide which side outweighs the other. Cincinnati seems like a decently long drive to me yeah. for a early start, but not an outrageous thing to do. So we'll see. Which way would you vote as a member of the traveling party?
I would. I mean,
at this point,
my vote doesn't really count here.
No, I know. I
would. I would fly to Cincy and drive to Indy. That's what I would do, because like you mentioned Philly and New York, that's a train ride. They could pull that off on a train if they wanted to.
Yeah, but they would probably bus. I think some of them occasionally bus as it is the day before, instead of going through the whole rigmarole of TSA in a flight.
So Paul and I were chatting about the first hour today. We're going to go in a number of different directions. But one of the things we can do is open up the phone lines and just chat with you. We haven't really opened up the lines at all this week with all the other discussion points that we've had. If you want to react to some NFL protocols, the Big Ten announcing they're going conference only and what that means moving forward for the SEC, is there spring football on the horizon? All of that and more. 615-737-1045, our number, 737-1045. Paul, coming up as well, a couple of weeks ago, Chad and I chatted with Mike Pereira, and one of the other storylines with all this is the protocols for the officials, who are normally older, you know, above the age of, what would you say, 45, 50 years old?
And yeah, no, it's generally trended down in the last 10 years.
Yes, and, you know, last year they had six new referees, the White Hats. They had six new refs. This year they have one, and that pool is certainly small. They don't have the XFL or the Alliance as a training ground for the officials coming into the league. They certainly make a list. It's a short list of a group of officials from the college ranks that they would call up. But the off-season training for the officials hasn't been there. OTAs, mini camps, they're not. I wouldn't guess that they would be in camp with the team if there's no joint practices, because that's normally when you have the officials in. What does that mean for the product from the officiating stance for the NFL? And what's the protocol if the head ref, if the white hat, tests positive during a week? Where do they pull from? Because there is a learning on the job aspect to that position, unlike anything else that the NFL requires from its officials. There's a organizational aspect to the white hat of a game that you just don't turn on or turn off based on moving to a different position on the field. I mean, it's going to be pure craziness if that happens. My guess is you'll have like a guy in waiting. You'd have a ref on reserve, but yeah, I don't
know. There'd be a ref
that.
On reserve. I mean, maybe in a couple places you'd have a ref on reserve, but I think you'd have a, I don't know who the next guy is. The umpire would move over, and the line judge would move to umpire, and you'd replace the side judge, or, you know, who is some low ranking person on the staff.
Let's get into what Pereira
had to
say.
But it's a big contingency. Yeah.
We asked Pereira, the former vice president of officials for the NFL, now a Fox Sports rules analyst, about what he thinks the protocols would be and how it would all work. That's coming up. Plus your calls. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone. Your home for the Titans and Vols is 104.5 The Zone. Alongside Paul Kuharski, I'm Jonathan Hutton. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, and online at edleysbbq.com. Download the Edley's app for curbside pickup options, and they also deliver through Postmates. You can get some delicious hot pork, Nashville-style hot chicken. You can find Nashville-style hot pulled pork from Edley's today and every Friday at their three locations, 12 South, East Nashville, and in Sylvan Park. We will get into the Big Ten going conference only with their schedule. We ended yesterday's show, Paul, saying, and I said, based on what we're seeing with leagues that are trying to return to a bubble, and I also need to preface the news with coronavirus changes almost daily with projections and outlooks. But if I'm the NFL behind the scenes, I'm saying let's get to week one. Let's not worry about two preseason games. As much as we need to do some evaluation, what you really need to do is make sure you're ready for week one if, in fact, your intention is to start September 10th. And a setback in the preseason sets potentially a whole locker room back, and that locker room would be facing off against another team in a game that doesn't matter. It matters to players that are trying to make a roster, but in the grand scheme of things, doesn't matter. Are you like me? You think we're going to see a preseason without games?
I think the case against it is increasingly strong for the reasons you're saying, and because players are going to say, not just get me to meaningful games, get me to games for which I will be paid.
Right.
Yeah, and those checks don't start coming. The regular season, the 1/17th of my salary doesn't start showing up until week one. Those preseason games don't carry financial implications.
And here's what we're – even if there are two preseason games, if I'm a coach, if I'm the head coach, if I'm a coordinator, I'm lobbying that my starters don't even make a trip. Like, we're not going to risk it. We're going to make sure our guys are staying back. We're going to get some work in at practice, however that goes. And the players I need to evaluate, those can be the guys that we take on the trip if we're required to go for a preseason game.
Which means something that the Titans rarely do, if this scenario plays out, is guys playing long chunks.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks playing potentially whole games or whole halves. Which we don't generally see, right? We see the Titans very much play people in shifts in preseason games. And this has been the case throughout every coach. We've rarely seen it. We saw Logan Woodside play, I think, almost an entire game last season, if I'm remembering correctly. Chicago. And that was a first, right? We'd never really seen that. So this could be force their hand in a way that we've rarely, if ever, seen in terms of, you know, one of the undrafted receivers, say, playing a whole game, or three of them playing, you know, virtually the whole game, or the four of them being the receiver stable for an entire game.
We had Pereira on a couple of weeks ago, the week you were out last time, Paul, and I thought it would be interesting to revisit this and discuss some of the protocols here hypothetically. But for every answer that we think the league has, and every league has, to a question, more questions arise from the answer that you're able to come to collectively. An example of that, for all of the planning and discussion and protocols that we've been reading through page after page after page, and discussion we've had about the NFL returning, who has asked about the officials? I'm sure the league has, but we haven't seen anything about that, and that hasn't been a point of discussion nationally. From media wondering. And
really smart idea by you guys.
We asked that question to Mike Pereira, who serves as the vice president of officiating for the NFL. And this was a topic recommended from Coach Mack. He's like, look, there's another group here that collectively has to get their stuff together, and it's the officials. And Pereira, who's now a Fox Sports rules analyst, gave us this answer.
Well, and if you think about all the ramifications of it, and you know, you kind of say, okay, now can we change the mechanics, and can we somehow move the officials further away? You've got officials that are standing at the sidelines, two of them on the sidelines, and if they're in the team area, they're right in front of the team area. Now we know we're outside, and the likelihood of catching it is certainly less when you're outside. Could you make some mechanical changes? Could you have officials wearing masks, with the exception maybe of the referee who has to make announcement? God forbid, could you take it off the field a little bit and use the quote-unquote sky judge to cover some of the areas and maybe have that ability to do something from a skybox and use less officials if need be. Which, by the way, I'm for the sky judge. I'm not saying anything negative about the sky judge. But all those questions probably hang out there that, like you say, you know, what about the chain crew? I mean, the chain crew that goes up and down the sidelines and in the team area, they're right in front of the team. These are like positions that are handed down in families from generation to generation. And trust me, they're not young people. So, what about them? I mean, it's just a lot of questions that hang out there. And when, to me, when I at least sit here in Sacramento, California, and think about it, it's like, okay, there's all these questions, but it's right around the corner.
League officials spend a ton of time in the offseason preparing for the upcoming season. It's more than just film study. Officials train in person during meetings and clinics held throughout the spring and summer. both with Al Riveron and now Walt Anderson, who leaves the field for the NFL front office. On top of that, there were no OTAs and mini camps to travel to. The camps will not include joint practices for preparation. So what is off-season prep? What's it been like this year?
The officials have very little on-field experience prior to a season other than going to a team's training camp for 3 or 4 days. So preseason really is critical for them. So who knows how that's going to work out. I'm not concerned about the rules. I mean, rules knowledge, you can handle that virtually easy. And obviously this year, there really isn't very much in the way of actual rule changes. But the whole lead up to the league year is going to be interesting when it comes to officiating. And I think they will probably be less prepared than they have ever been. Now, that doesn't mean they can get back, you know, on the horse fairly quickly once the season starts. But I do think they're under. You know, more pressure, I think, when you look at all aspects of it, because not only are you talking about the rules, but, you know, what about, you know, when we talk about the virus and we talk about COVID-19, we're talking about a lot of young people when it comes to players, but we're not talking about a lot of young officials when it comes to officials. You know, how safe is a 68-year-old referee that is one of the best in the league, and how safe is he going to be around these players? I mean, the last thing we want to do is put him in a position where he could contract the virus, you know, from one of the players who maybe is asymptomatic and all of that stuff. But maybe in all likelihood, that 68 or 69-year-old guy won't be asymptomatic. So that question hangs over them too. You know, will they be willing to put themselves in a position where they could get the virus? So they're like everybody else, and I mean, and that's players and officials and broadcasters. I don't think any of us know anything now other than the fact that there's not going to be a Hall of Fame game. And so I think when you have all that uncertainty, it makes it difficult trying to figure out what it's going to be like.
The NFL has 17 officiating crews. Always they always have an entire crew in reserve that can be in rotation if they need it, and plus they have some alternates. But if we see a lead official, the white hat who's assigned to this Sunday's Titans Colts matchup, if that guy tests positive during the week, he's off the crew. But Pereira says it's a position that's not as simple as just pointing to the next man in the crew. That could be what they do. Or they could have a referee on standby and fly to that city as part of that 17th crew that's on reserve. But the position itself is one that's difficult to train for, and it's a spotlight that you have to experience to truly learn the nuance of what's expected and required.
Yeah, it's really, I'll tell you, it's really difficult. And, you know, that's why, you know, when really good college officials come into the league and they were referees in college, you know, you throw them at a side judge or a deep official position or a line of scrimmage position. And quite frankly, they have a tendency to struggle. And I speak from personal knowledge. I mean, I was a referee in college, and then I was went into the league and I worked the side judge position. And it was a struggle because of the fact that you had never really worked that position before. But you're in a holding pattern, and you somewhat, you know, expect that because the nuances are so different. I mean, they're so different than they are in college in terms of the reporting, what you have to report to the league, the halftime stuff, the pregame stuff. It's all different, the work with the television networks. And it does take time. And when you look at history, I mean, you know, Tommy Bell, prior to Brad Allen, who is the referee now who came in directly from the ACC a few years ago into the referee position. Prior to that, it was Tommy Bell was the guy that made the jump directly as the referee. It's hard, and the game is faster, and it's just a huge adjustment. But, you know, again, I say they've been better prepared because you have, like, Lan Clark, who's going to be the new referee this year. But he's worked preseason games already. I mean, he worked them over the last couple of years because he was on that developmental list. And so during that time, he got to work preseason games. And even during now that he's been in, and this is true of the rest of them that they see as future referees, even during the preseason now, they'll get a shot to be the referee. And when they do that, they'll have a veteran referee that's there with him that can, you know, be on the sideline and work with them and that type of thing. So I really think that the training program overall is really so much better than it used to be. And I've always been the one that has argued against full-time officials. I've changed my argument a little bit because I think the referee position is so important and so difficult that the 17 of the white hats I would like to see full-time. But again, I'm not sure if that will come to fruition in the near future.
That's Mike Pereira, and we went several layers deeper in that conversation, a podcast that's available at midday180.com. Paul, your thoughts?
Yeah, really good stuff there. The spacing I hadn't thought about. I don't know that you can do anything with spacing. I mean, if you're going to move guys further away, I mean, there's no way to move the sideline guy further away unless you're moving the entire sideline further back. And then again, you'd be asking people to break longstanding habits and to basically change a rule with no practice in terms of where the coach could be, where the people on the sidelines could be, where the medical people could be. There's different amounts of space per stadium between the sideline and the front row of the stadium construction. So I think that'd be difficult, and you'd have to have already heard about that, and we haven't heard anything about that. So I don't think the league's putting that into consideration. But those side judges, the ones along the sideline, are going to be getting breathed on by players and coaches who are working that sideline. And so they're in proximity in a way that, you know, is not ideal and not necessarily necessary, if you will. I hadn't thought about that. You know, they're going to be rusty without a preseason, just as players are going to be rusty. We've set aside, you know, a lot of officiating is one of the league's biggest issues. It's not been something that we've talked about during this offseason with all the COVID issues about all these things they've had to iron out. That's why McGinnis did us a favor here by bringing you guys the officiating issue and you guys taking it forward to get Pereira on. But they'd be rusty with a preseason. You know, there's always going to be officiating issues starting with week one. If there are no preseason games, you know, there are going to be issues in quarterback accuracy and offensive line play and drops and all of these things that are going to frustrate us. And you could put right on the top of that board officiating, missed flags, over officious flags, poor descriptions of calls, bad communications among officials, all of those things. And I think we generally see that, and we will see more of that. And then new guys, you know, probably going to have it the worst. Guys coming into the league who are new side judges or whatever position they start at, guys who have been promoted, new referees who have come up the pipeline, they're going to be really under the gun without having preseason games to have worked. And I would think nerves will be high for those guys, you know, if their first thing is Thursday night football, Sunday afternoon football, Monday night football of week one. You know, and it's hard to hold it against them, but that's what we'll do.
You know, and maybe the, you know, some of these bigger conferences going to conference only games frees up some referees or some officials that could make that jump. Right. I'm just thinking, so it's more than just the reserve crew, you know, it's more than just that 17th group. What do you do if one of the officials for that game day walks through the temperature scan and he's got a fever that morning?
Yeah. Do you have a contingency with a college official who, a good college official who's in the same city on the same day, who's good enough to flip between college and NFL rules, which is no small change, you know, just 1 foot versus 2 feet, on a reception is, you know, it sounds like an easy change, but in the moment on a bang, bang play yesterday, 1 foot was good. Today I need 2 feet. And in the speed of the moment, I've got to make that call. You know, they've got to be planning for all kinds of contingencies and, you know, how spaced out are those guys going to be in their, you know, an official's locker room is a small place. You know, we know the Titans officials locker room is, you know, not equipped for, an 8-man crew. It's probably more people than that in there when you count replay officials and the like who are probably, visiting with those guys. Do they have a bigger meeting room where they can have their pregame get together? A halftime meeting that they probably have. Their post-game review is probably going to be different and now held by Zoom. All of these things. More layers, more layers, more layers that the league's got to sort through. And again, I say in terms of the broader thing, that includes the officiating, but the entire umbrella, we keep coming up with more issues and more issues and hear the players talking to the league with more issues and more issues. There's not a lot of time. And J.J. Watt said, you know, let's not force this report date if we're not ready. It's conceivable they're not ready.
Well,
I don't see them moving that report date. Do you?
I don't. And I think that they have been meeting a lot behind the scenes. Where we started on Monday, where you were complaining to Mike about the lack of information, to today, 5 days later, and the amount of information that's been out there, there's a lot of information that's made its way to the media this week that they've been discussing for the last couple of months.
Yeah, but one of the, if you look at, and I confess I haven't read all of that, but one of the headlines that come, I mean, the most important stuff's generally going to be the headline items that come out. And one of the headlines items that's come out is no post-game handshaking and jersey exchanging.
If that's like an item in like a mini page report here, you know, one of the articles goes into the cleanliness of the locker room. And the detail that has to be done there.
Were three cleanings of the locker room on the game day?
Prior to the team arriving, it will be cleaned again at halftime and cleaned again post-game. And then there will be shields put up in between lockers if you cannot properly space out 6 feet around the locker room.
I think we're going to wind up seeing a lot of that. I'm picturing like Jacksonville's locker rooms, which just are tight. And that's the case in a lot of buildings.
Visiting locker rooms are terrible across the league.
Yeah, generally speaking. Jacksonville's home locker room is.
I mean, Kansas City. Nice,
but
Kansas
still, City's it's not, a good example. It's even a nice home locker room, and Jacksonville's got a very nice home locker room. It's not built to be spaced out. I mean, you know, a wide locker is a nice locker, but it doesn't mean. Right. That you've got any kind of real space between you and the next guy. It just means you've got a 6 foot wide locker or a 4.5 foot wide locker or whatever it might be. But there's not a huge bumper next to you. You know, an elite player might have an empty locker next to him, and that's the real bonus. But beyond that, the spacing is not, nobody has this kind of spacing. Nobody.
615-737-1045, our number. Your phone call's coming up. We'll get into some other discussion points of the return to play scenarios. We'll move to college when we come back and discuss the Big Ten's decision to go conference only. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Check out Adley's Barbecue for lunch today. Three locations, 12 Southeast Nashville, Sylvan Park. It's the Midday 180, queued up by Adley's Barbecue. Paul, I'm looking at the reasoning behind the Big Ten going to conference only, and it gives them some options now. If they need to push back the season, they can still fit it within the frame. of those months. If you need to postpone a game due to a team suffering several positive tests instead of a forfeit, those are your options as well. I think several other conferences will follow suit in this, but I do think there is a game of chicken being played here contractually, because if you're a Power 5 school and you are on the hook for paying a team money to come play you early in the season, you want that team or that conference that they're playing in to announce they're going conference only first, so you're not on the hook for backing out of the game. I think that's part of the tactics here. Personally, the whole travel issue, that doesn't make sense to me, because in the Big 12, you're going to have West Virginia traveling to play TCU, for instance.
Yeah.
It's much simpler for, like, some of the out of conference games that these teams will be playing are, you know, busable. Kentucky playing Louisville every year is an easy trip to make. You know, if you're making the argument that you should cancel games due to travel and due to logistics, that's not the game to cancel. So the traveling portion of it that I'm hearing spread out there as a reason why you go to conference only, again, some of that doesn't make a whole lot of sense based on some of the scheduling that goes on.
Yeah, it's not like the conferences are tightly packed, geographically stacked, in a way that once upon a time they were.
The SEC is pretty good, like, regionally. You know, if you make a decision on one team, chances are it's good for all, because you're in the region of the United States that you can actually predict, if that's possible. But if you're predicting, you know, a team on the East Coast that's playing down in Texas next week, that's tough.
Yes. I'm curious about your TV theory, and that's something that we could hit with Clay here, who might have some insight into it. I wonder what the implications are in terms of the lost money. And I wonder, you know, are they just going to, you know, is there definitely going to be football in that window if everybody now goes to conference only? Are they going to wind up being windows, even if a college football season is played where it's all conference games? That's going to make for fewer windows, right? That the conference-only seasons are not going to last as long and include as many games. And does that create some windows that the NFL is going to want to pop into, going to be able to pop into?
I think absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, I would imagine the NFL's eager for this thing to sift out if leagues are going to be following suit, so that they can spring those schedule changes on their fans, and do what they're going to do, so that we would all know. I'm intrigued by that. But I want to know how many conferences are going to follow suit here. You mentioned the Notre Dame idea here in conjunction with the ACC yesterday during our conversation with, was it Godfrey?
Yeah.
I want to see how that all sifts out, puts them in an awkward position for sure. And the ACC, they have a partnership, obviously, outside of football and a little bit inside of football. It's going to be very curious what happens here. And I think the dominoes have started to fall that suggest a lot of teams are going to be doing this. And, you know, if you're the SEC and you don't want to be doing this, but you have ACC on your schedule and you have Big Ten on your schedule, you don't, what choice do you have? If those games are dropping off, but then somebody else is playing Pac-10, like, what do you say? Well, I've got Pac-10 games, so I'm going to continue to play my full schedule. But then are your opponents who have Big Ten and ACC games saying, well, that's unbalanced and in some ways not fair. So do we get to have these completely unbalanced schedules? And then does it change the national championship picture? Does it change, you know, it's a lot of jagged looking schedules, right? You're playing more than I'm playing. And
if you're playing 8 conference games versus 10 or 8 versus 9 and you're playing a conference-only schedule, there has to be some symmetry with every Power 5 conference playing the same amount of games, right?
You're getting rested, and I'm getting beaten up, but I'm getting a chance to win a good-looking game, and you're not doing anything. How do you measure those things?
You're right. I mean, and if they're not going to work together on that, then how do you come about selecting teams for a college football playoff, you know, if it's not uniform? We're trending towards every conference going to conference only games. But, you know, last night, as soon as the news cycle went from conference only, it started to sift to, okay, spring football. Because Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner, said, we're going conference only. I don't know if we're actually going to play football in the fall. We're trying to, but it may not happen. And, you know, we'll talk with Clay about this, but he's still saying that may happen for other leagues. It's not going to happen in the SEC. It's the fall for the SEC. Well, it may be conference only, but we're just around the corner now from kickoff.
We're talking conference only, but you add a couple additional games across division?
Well, yeah, exactly. You would have your cross-divisional opponent you would add in. To strengthen the 10-game season if you only had, you know, 9 that you're choosing from. So you would rotate those teams in is what would happen.
How do you choose them? That's to be determined, right? How would you choose them?
Well, the SEC.
Out of a hat?
No, I don't know. I mean,
some
you
kind
would
of
still,
rivalry?
I mean, yeah, you'd still want Tennessee and Alabama playing, right? So you try to keep that going. The SEC league officials are meeting on Monday. In person in Birmingham.
You keep it as scheduled, and then you're adding an additional one. So how do you choose the additional one?
I wonder if you can look to next year. Can you look to next year as the next team that rotates in and add them to your schedule? I don't know.
Or avoid that because it's next year, and look.
Yeah, or go back to last year.
Away. Yeah, look at the one that's furthest away. I don't know. There's a lot of intrigue there.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll get more news on all this Monday with the league officials meeting in Birmingham. We'll talk with Clay coming up in about 20 minutes. Reed's got some headlines for you when we come back. And, Paul, there was we had some discussion recently about NFL stadiums, seating charts, and for the longest time, the upper deck in football stadiums has been the toughest ticket to sell in sports. That's been my opinion going for a while as you look team to team, no matter how good they are, a lot of times there's plenty of empties in those seats that are not the premium price. And there's a study out about a shift in that line of thinking, a shift in the seating chart for stadiums of the future.
Yeah, they it's according to this architect who talked to the Athletic, the further away from the court, the rink, or the field that you get, the less profitable the seat is and the more expensive it is to build, which fits right into kind of, I didn't know about the more costly it is to build, but it fits right into what you're saying. And so he says that's something that's going to increasingly affect the venues that we see built, which he presumes are going to be smaller in a way that we've discussed as demand seemingly goes down, which is something we're not going to see right now. We're going to see, I think we're going to see demand go up. I don't know. Maybe we're not going to see demand go up. It's going to be a curious time. Something to talk about.
Yeah, Jack. We'll get into it. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 Zone.